Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hello, like mother, like murder listeners. I am Rachel.
And I'm Heather.
We are the hosts of Like Mother, Like Murder.
We bring you the good, the badass, and the crime.
Each week, we bring you stories from missing and murdered
to survivors and women who empower you.
And of course, some mom talk sprinkled in.
Check us out wherever you get your podcasts at Like Mother, Like Murder.
And give us a follow on social media so that we can say hi.
Okay, love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye.
Welcome to the Getting Down and Wordy podcast ad.
What do we do on this podcast?
Well, it's the first Edamusical podcast.
Can you try that again in real words so that people can understand?
Fine. We talk about the intersection of popular music and language.
Oh, can we also talk about Eurovision?
Okay.
Find us on Apple and Spotify.
We are a Podmoth Network podcast.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Hi, friends.
What story do you have for us today, Mom?
Well, I have another syndrome for you. Last week I did the exploding. There's no gore in this one. It's fine. There's not going to be any grossy stuff. Okay. I promise. It's not gross.
Okay.
It's interesting. What story do you have for us today?
This week, I have the story of Mary Ellen Samuels, also known as the Green Widow.
Awesome.
And to go with it, I have the Green Widow cocktail.
Yay.
I just had to pick it because the name was spot on, but...
For sure. For sure.
The weird part is, I looked up this cocktail and there was three different recipes that I saw. Like two or three. One of them is two parts blue curacao, three parts orange juice. That sounds gross to me, so I didn't make that.
Agreed.
But then when you scroll down, there's another one, and it's 2 ounces of vodka, 1 ounce of apple liqueur. I used green sour apple DeCoopers. Squeeze in half the juice of a lime, add a splash of simple syrup. Shake in your cocktail shaker for about 10 seconds and strain into a chilled iced glass. So that's the cocktail we made today, and let's give it a try.
All right, let's go.
Oh, that tastes like a sour apple Jolly Rancher. It's so
kind
good.
Of. I think I needed more simple syrup in mine.
Mine is more green than yours.
Yeah.
I think.
It's not There's very like green a pale at all. White. It's very, yeah, it's very, it's a very light shade of green. I don't think I like it.
I like it. It tastes like candy.
I wanted to like it, but I don't think I like it. It's a little medicinal.
Mine tastes like candy. I don't know where you're getting medicinal from.
How much simple did you put in yours?
I have like a squeeze, like a, you know, the old ketchup style bottles.
Yeah.
I just did like one squeeze.
I just so had
not,
a...
Not a lot.
I poured it in.
Not a ton.
I need more in mine. Ah. Okay. Let's go for this story. Okay. I think I know a little bit about this story because I think I know where you got the inspiration from to do this story.
I don't remember where I got it. And I think I heard it on the Bonfire radio show. I don't really remember.
I think you heard it on Armchair Anonymous, the episode of Jury Duty, because that's where I heard it.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
And I looked it up and I was like, this, I'm going to do this. And then I saw your drink and I was like, oh, you're doing
it. It was hard to find information for it. Like,
oh, I bet.
There wasn't like a solid article about it. So that it took me a while to figure it out.
Well, it's older.
Let's talk about it.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So Bob Samuels grew up in Santa Ana, California, and was very interested in photography when he was growing up. As a young adult, he worked his passion and skill into photography to work his way into the movie shoots as an assistant videographer for big-name movies such as Beverly Hills Cop and Lethal Weapon 2. After divorcing his previous wife, he reconnected with Mary Ellen Gernick, who he went to high school with. They hit it off, and in 1980, Mary and Bob were married. Their marriage started off great, but as the years went on, Mary began to get bored as the two settled into married life.
Well, marriage is hard.
He was always gone. I mean, yeah, but he was always gone, and she wanted a party.
Oh, yes, that is problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. Bob was working long hours on set, and while he was gone, Mary would often do her favorite hobby, shopping.
Okay.
The two got into an argument over her spending after he found out she spent over $22,000 in 1 month.
Wow. And that was...
Yeah.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
So...
I couldn't do that unless I bought a car. How do you buy that many clothes and shit?
Bags, jewelry.
Ooh, I guess Chanel bags aren't cheap, but...
No.
Mary's boredom would eventually lead her to going out and meeting men. During their marriage, she had several boyfriends which Bob found out about, leading to them breaking up several times. However, Mary always lured Bob back into her grasps. Bob realized she needed something to keep her busy, in particular, a job. Mary was unemployed.
Yeah.
So. Bob franchised a Subway in San Fernando Valley in the hopes that Mary would run it and that would keep her busy, stop her from spending his money and fucking other dudes.
No.
But Mary had other ideas.
No. No.
When Mary was at the Subway, it would frequently get robbed.
What?
But Mary wouldn't want to get police involved. In reality, Mary was using the stolen money from the robbery to buy cocaine in the store.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah.
So
this place would get...
Did not expect this.
Theoretically robbed.
Robbed.
And then she would use the money that was stolen.
Stolen.
To buy cocaine.
Okay. Well... Yeah. Interesting. Didn't expect that coming.
She had a 16-year-old daughter named Nicole, who she would bring partying with her, getting her into nightclubs and bars as well as Nicole's friends.
Yuck.
So after 6 years together, Bob and Mary separated. Kind of. They didn't get divorced, but they were living in different places. And Bob was supporting her.
But they'd done this before, right? Like broken up and then got back together.
Yeah, they kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't a
idealistic marriage. She must be magical.
That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
So he continued to support her financially, paying for her apartment and all her shit, basically. But
that's nice.
In 1988, after 2 years of Bob supporting Mary, Bob decided he wanted to divorce her, which makes sense. I'm surprised it took him 2 years, but.
Yes.
Mary hated the idea of being a divorcee, so she hatched a plan. Mary partied all the time, and in doing so, met a lot of shady characters. She would tell the shady men she met about Bob and her predicament in hopes of finding a hitman.
Okay. I love it.
Yes. This proved harder than she thought, so she recruited her 16-year-old daughter to help her find a hitman.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Don't take your 16-year-old partying with you at clubs and don't recruit her to find you a hitman.
Someone to kill her dad, yeah.
That's bullshit. That poor kid.
While out of the bar one night, Nicole met drug dealer Jimmy Bernstein. Jimmy fell in love with Nicole and the two got engaged. However, just like her mother, Nicole was seeing other people as well and had a second fiancé.
Wow.
Nicole would switch her rings depending on who she was hanging out with. I should sign that.
Okay.
So
that's something a 16-year-old. I shouldn't
that's
say
insane.
That.
Insane.
That's something I think, honestly, a lot of people would do if they were cheaters.
See you next Tuesday.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Oh, good Lord. Good Lord.
So Mary met Jimmy and started spinning a tale to him. She told Jimmy that Bob was abusive to her and Nicole, and that Bob had been abusing Nicole since she was a kid.
Oh.
This enraged Jimmy,
not okay.
And so he started coming up with a plan to kill Bob.
Gross.
December 7th, 1988, Bob got home after work and hopped right into the shower. Jimmy and a friend broke into the house while he was showering, and when Bob walked out of the bathroom, one of them hit Bob with the butt of a shotgun, knocking him out.
No.
They put a pillow over his head and shot him point blank with the shotgun before leaving the house. To appear innocent, Mary kept calling Bob and leaving voicemails about how she wanted to get back together with him. She asked Jimmy to make it look like a robbery, but he didn't do that. So Mary took it into her own hands. Her and Nicole went to the house and threw open drawers, marked up the door with a crowbar, and trashed the place. But what they didn't do is steal anything valuable.
Good Lord.
So several days later, Mary called the police to report Bob's murder. She claimed she was calling him over and over with no response, so she stopped by, and that's when she found him. When detectives arrived, they thought something seemed off because no valuables were taken.
Right.
Even though they made it look like a robbery had happened.
Okay. If you're gonna make it look like a robbery, take some of the shit out. Especially if it's
anything.
Worth... Take the TV.
Rolex, a watch, like...
Okay. All right. Well, back in the day, you couldn't really take a TV because in the 80s, TVs were big.
Weighed 800 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not taking a TV, but she could have taken jewelry.
Watches, jewelry.
Yeah.
Like the wallet, maybe. Yeah.
Something. Good Lord.
The police interrogated Mary and let her go, but she couldn't keep the act up for long. At Bob's funeral, she seemed almost jovial. And Bob's family picked up on this.
I don't like this lady.
Since Bob never officially divorced Mary, she inherited over $500,000 from his life insurance policy and the subway store.
She
moved right back into his house.
Well, of course.
Didn't even clean the blood off the hallway floor. She just threw a rug over the stains.
Okay.
This bitch, exactly.
I've got a lot of problems with her, but that's the biggest one. Like, are you kidding me? Clean that shit up.
$500,000. Just fucking call for a carpet cleaner.
Yeah. Oh. Gross.
So Jimmy had realized that he had been used by Mary, so he threatened to call the police on her.
Oh,
Mary decided that since her first plan worked out, she'd try it again. This time on Jimmy. To sew up her loose ends.
Oh my god.
Mary met Paul Gall, which, what a name.
Yeah. His parents did him a disservice.
Fofo's I'm sipping. Not Paul Wall, Paul Gall.
Oh, terrible.
So Paul's brother had died from a drug overdose, and Paul's girlfriend had apparently owed Mary some money. Paul had mentioned that he believed all drug dealers should die, which Jimmy was a drug dealer.
Okay.
So Mary was able to manipulate Paul and his girlfriend into killing Jimmy. Paul and his friend Daryl hatched a plan with Jimmy to go and steal some drugs from a nearby drug dealer. Paul was the driver, Jimmy was in shotgun, and Daryl sits in the back. On the way to the fake robbery, Daryl started to strangle Jimmy from the back seat.
Okay.
Jimmy is able to get out of the car and starts running, but the two men catch up to him. They beat him, strangle him, and throw his body over a ravine before returning back to Mary's house.
Wow.
Over a month later, Jimmy's body was found, and the police decided to check his house. Inside, they found $25,000 life insurance policy that was filed a day after he killed Bob, with Nicole being the recipient.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, don't involve your teenage daughter.
Bigger red flag.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Ann Hambly was Paul's roommate, and when police arrived at their home, they questioned Ann. Ann mentioned that she thought Paul was responsible for Jimmy's death, and Paul was brought into questioning. Police threw the books at him, so they came to a deal, and Paul immediately gave up Ann.
Ratted her out. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, not Ann, Mary. Mary was arrested 6 to 8 months after Bob's murder. She had spent almost all of the $500,000 and earned the name Green Widow after a photo of her covered in $20,000 in cash was revealed.
Did you see that picture?
Yes.
Yeah. I looked it up. I looked it up.
Mary was given the death penalty. And that's where she sits today.
Right. She's not getting executed. It's in California.
It's in California. She's not getting executed.
They don't execute anybody in California. Yeah. She's on life row. She's just hanging out.
She's a see you next Tuesday. That's for sure.
Wow. My goodness.
Horrible woman.
I get, like, tie up your loose ends. I get that. But fucking hell. Be smart about it.
Move back into the place that your husband was murdered and just don't even clean it up. You just
don't look shady. Don't look shady. It's going to be one of our...
It's a horrible story.
Yeah, it is. Wow. That picture of her covered in $20,000 is pretty funny, though. Yeah. Makes me wonder who took the picture.
Whatever boyfriend she was seeing at the time, probably.
Good point. She had a few of them, it sounds like. Eeks.
And she involved her kid. What a fucking
bitch.
That's
shitty. Yeah. You're right. See you next Tuesday.
All right, let's hear your story, Mom.
Okay. Are you ready for my syndrome story? I promise there's no explosions in this one. You might have heard about people who have amazing gifts for art or music or with numbers. They are often referred to as savants. What's that?
I said autism.
A lot of times, yes. Okay. Generally, people that are considered savants typically have their gifts and abilities from early childhood and often have a deficit in another area, like an intellectual or a social impairment. Many of them have been diagnosed with some level of autism, like you mentioned. So if you're super gifted in one thing, sometimes you have less skill in another, essentially is what the concept is. But did you know that some people gain their savant skills as adults after they have suffered a head injury?
Really?
Yes. These are referred to as acquired savants, and they didn't have their abilities before the injury. So
I just have to say, like, TBIs are so interesting to me. Like,
yes,
because we don't really know, we don't have a way to detect them other
how
than
how severe
if
they
you're
are
documented, like getting hit in the head. But there's a lot of weird things that can happen after TBIs. Like,
yeah,
I'm excited to hear about what you're
some of
tell
these.
Us.
Some of these are physical trauma, but sometimes, like all the stories that I'm going to tell you today are physical trauma. But there are some cases where acquired savant syndrome happened in people that had dementia. So like a part of the brain deteriorates from dementia, and then it comes back. They have this other skill that appears. So not just...
Okay.
It's not just adults. It does happen in kids. And one of the stories is about a childhood trauma, but it was the kid did not have the skills before and the kid had the skills after. Okay. So this condition often develops after someone suffers an injury, specifically to the left anterior temporal lobe of the brain. So basically the front left side right here, like near the temple, by the ear. Right in front of the ear, essentially.
So it's not the frontal lobe. It's
correct.
The brain is
so
confusing.
So frontal is like forehead.
The frontal is right before the temple then?
Yes.
Okay. And then it goes to the temporal and then...
Temporal is right here. Like it's a smaller lobe right above the ear, basically. Then you've got the parietal, which sits on like either side. And then the occipital is the back.
Okay.
So temporal, just think like the temple, your temple, behind your ear, like behind your ear and in front of, or behind your eye and in front of your ear, basically. Okay. This part of the brain is responsible for communication, part of your senses, processing emotions, and is used in accessing memories. So there's a lot of stuff that happens in that part of the brain. And when one side of the brain is injured, the opposite side often compensates for the deficit due to the injury. Some believe that the skills are not newly gained, but had existed in the brain before and are now being released. So that concept is like you really are smart at math, but it's kind of being covered up by other functions. And now those other functions are gone.
Like,
and so now they're forward.
Something that they had learned as kids maybe and
potentially
blocked out. And now it's okay. So if your grandpa taught you whittling and then.
Well,
all of a sudden know how to whittle really good.
These
like that,
ones.
Something like that?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
These people don't have, you know, necessarily have these skills or have ever learned them. We'll get into what some of those are. Basically, acquired savants have demonstrated abilities in interesting areas like music. Some can suddenly play instruments that they couldn't before. Yeah.
So you're telling me if I hit my head enough, I could learn how to play guitar?
Maybe. Just hit it on the left side behind your eye and in front of your ear. Be careful. Don't damage the frontal lobe. That could be problematic.
It's already damaged.
Calendar calculating, which is making complex mathematical calculations based on calendar dates. Even
that
making
is
those calculations.
One of the craziest fucking mm-hmm. things like that. I keep saying
this
autistic,
is,
but like that's what I'm like. What I've seen is people be like, oh, what day was a Thursday in 1970? And they know exactly what day
and
it
they,
is. Like,
yes.
It's incredible. Like, how
it is.
They're able to just calculate, like, no.
I don't know. It's wild. But they can also do this between different types of calendars. So, I don't know.
Like the Mayan?
I don't know. Maybe. It's wild.
The Mayan just had a bunch of autistic people making calendars.
Could be. Mathematics is another area, often done very quickly or in complex equations. Art, like painting, drawing, or sculpting. Mechanical or spatial skills, like being able to accurately measure things without the use of tools. So you can be like, it's 12 feet, 6¾ inches, and not have a tape measure.
I mean, I can do that, but in a stupid idiot way. Like, I know that when I curve my knuckle like this, it's 1.5 inches. So I can measure things like that,
but not like feet.
Not look
you're
at
not,
it and see.
You're not
like, yeah,
gonna take your I finger can't. And be like, oh,
1, 2, 3, 4.
Exactly. You're not doing that.
Yeah.
You're not doing that. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Some of them can tell time perfectly without using a clock. Languages is another area, like suddenly being able to speak or comprehend a language that they have never studied before or didn't know before proficiently. Now all of a sudden they can speak this language.
Maybe we'll talk about this in a future episode, but there was a guy that got like a heart transplant or something like that. And he he knew how to speak Mandarin or something like that.
We have to look that up because I've heard of that a couple of times.
About it. Yeah. There's multiple instances of that happening, which is super bizarre. But
yeah, I want to know that. Some of them have detailed knowledge in fields that they were not previously familiar with. And some have unusual sensory changes in touch, vision, or smell. So
all
that
off of TBIs?
Yes. Or dementia. Okay. Basically some injury, it's a physical
injury
or deterioration of the brain. Yeah. And the sensory changes are like where they could, like if you see something or you smell, like have you ever heard of people that are like, oh, I can smell that color? Where it's
synesthesia.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, which I'm going to cover in another episode. It's down on my list of things. Yeah. I read a book where the main character has synesthesia, and it's super interesting. It's a fictional book, but still, I want to cover it. It's cool. Anyway, for some reason, savant syndrome has, as a whole, is more common in men than women by 6-1.
I think.
Don't know why.
That's due to men having higher percentage of TBIs, probably.
That could be.
Men play football too,
and
but yeah,
and they're doing stupid stuff.
Motorcycle riders are primarily men. Like, there's more chance for men to get hit in the head than women.
Valid point, not from a sexist standpoint, but
just
I totally agree with you.
A logistical one, but like,
yes,
yeah. I definitely have some TBIs from playing football, so
Yes. It makes sense. Yeah. Acquired savant syndrome is the same way, but a little bit less. So savant syndrome is 6-1, but acquired savant syndrome is not quite 6-1. It's like 5 and some change or 4 and some change to 1. The actual number of acquired savant, what?
So 5 in 1 people that have had TBIs get savant syndrome?
No. No, it's just saying that of the people that end up with acquired savant syndrome, there's more men than women.
Oh, 5 in 1 are men.
About a ratio of 4 or 5 to 1, depending on the source.
I was like, I didn't get any savant syndrome.
Not that, that frequent.
Okay.
And honestly, there's only anywhere from 40 to 60 total cases reported of acquired savant syndrome. So it's pretty rare. It's pretty rare. So I'm going to talk about some of the notable cases that have been reported, only a few of them. Alonzo Clemens was born in Boulder, Colorado. When he was 3 or 4 years old, he suffered a fall, and that led to a brain injury and significant developmental disabilities. Soon after the brain trauma, he became interested in playing with clay. According to his mom, he had no interest in playing with clay before. And then all of a sudden, he's like, I want to play with clay. And that was the only thing that entertained him and, like, he could focus on. Although he could barely speak and couldn't read or write, he could work clay with amazing detail, sculpting not only clay, but also other things like butter or lard when he couldn't get clay.
Just want to say, I think it's super cool that, like, I follow a bunch of, like, pottery people online, and they can just go in their backyard and be like, oh, this is clay. I'm going to take it home and dry it up, and it's red clay or it's yellow clay. Like, I think that's
super
cool.
They make shit with it.
Yeah.
I know.
It's a messy hobby, but it's a cool hobby.
It is a cool hobby. Now, sculpting by itself is cool, like we said, but not necessarily worthy of being considered savant in status if you're going to be a savant of something.
Depends on what they're making in clay.
Exactly. It makes it pretty amazing that he makes these sculptures from memory. He can make a realistic, lifelike 3D sculpture of an animal that he sees in person, on TV, or has even been given a picture of and only shown for a few seconds. So you can show this guy a picture of
hummingbird again?
When he was three or four.
Three or four, okay.
Yeah. He's never received any formal training in sculpting either. So he's like, one of his famous sculptures is of horses, young horses. And there's a couple of them and they're running and playing. And so it's a movement type sculpture that he has made from memory. Not like he like live on a ranch and knew a lot about horses.
Watch
like
horses
he saw a picture.
All his life. Yeah. He just saw one of them running. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool
it's
fuck.
Really cool. Another case is that of Tony Chicoria. He was well into adulthood when he received his traumatic injury. Prior to being injured, he made some great personal accomplishments, becoming a medical doctor and specializing as an orthopedic surgeon. When he was 42 years old, he was standing near a phone booth when lightning struck, literally. And so for some people who are not old enough to know or have never seen a phone booth, it's like metal and there was a phone inside and the lightning struck it. And the lightning jumped from the phone booth into his body. You mentioned near-death experiences. He had a near-death experience and saw his body from above. He saw his body on the ground surrounded by a bluish white light. So throwback to episode 77 when we talked about near-death experiences. If you haven't listened to that one, feel free to go back. And we talked specifically about some of the common things that people see in near-death experiences. And often one of those is their own body. Thankfully, the next person in line for the phone was a nurse, and she provided Tony with CPR, likely saving his life. After the accident, he started having memory problems and lack of energy. Tests showed no abnormalities, and his symptoms eventually went away, but then he developed a huge interest in piano music. He didn't want to just listen to it. He wanted to play it. He bought a piano and quickly taught himself to play and soon began composing music. So not enough to just play, he wanted to write piano music. About 3 months after the accident, he was spending the majority of his time playing and composing piano music. He has played publicly in theaters, playing well-known composers, and also his own written pieces. So not something
wow,
that
that's
just...
super impressive.
I know, crazy, right?
Music
some people,
is like the...
It's
I've
wild.
I've tried so hard to get into instruments. Like I did the cello, I did...
Guitar, trumpet.
Guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that you have to have, like...
in your brain.
It should be a genetic thing, like a genetic makeup almost. Like,
yeah,
the ability to play music well. Like,
I would agree with that.
It's so difficult to get into.
Yeah.
Granted, my cello melted when we put it next to the radiator. Yeah.
Orlando
Sorrell
suffered his injury as a child. When he was 10 years old, he was playing baseball with friends when he was hit in the head. He didn't tell his parents about the injury and never had any medical care for it. Not shocking. What 10-year-old tells their parents they were smashed in the head with baseball?
Okay. I'd like to say that my eyes are so dark that you guys couldn't tell when I had a concussion.
No, probably not, unless we were staring at them.
I guarantee I had a couple.
Yeah.
I never turned into
you
a
had
savant.
Some concussions.
I wish I did.
For
I
sure. Did. Orlando suffered from headaches for several months, but once they subsided, he developed a new talent. He could suddenly perform calendar calculations with the ability to complete complex math equations and conversions between different types of calendars. He also demonstrated remarkable memory, being able to recall not only the weather on any given day, but also what he was doing and where he was on that day.
He was a literal rain man.
I would freaking hate that.
He's the rain man. He knows when the rain's coming.
I don't like it. I would hate that skill.
Funny. Oh my God.
A lesser known case was from Croatia. The person's name was withheld for her privacy as it happened to a child. We do know that it was a 13-year-old who had fallen into a coma, although I don't know why she was in a coma, but she was in a coma for about 24 hours. When she woke up, she could no longer speak her native language. Instead, she could speak and understand German, which I don't know how different
that's weird.
Those languages are. I think they might be.
Can't speak her normal language?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Right?
It's not that she added it, just swapped? That's weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Before her coma, she had been studying German, but was by no means fluent in it. After the coma, she couldn't understand Croatian. Or I'm sorry, she could understand it, but she could no longer speak it. She could understand and speak German. She needed a translator to help her communicate with her family and healthcare providers. So I have a question for you. If you ended up with a TBI in the right spot and you got acquired savant syndrome, what skill would you want to have?
Math, I think. I've never been good at math. And if I was good at math, it's just suddenly like
Yeah.
I think it hindered my math getting concussions. So
it might have.
I think I'm owed it.
In the universe.
What about
in
you?
In the universe. I think I would want language.
I think I changed my answer from math to music, but if you could just suddenly play guitar, like, it'd be so sick.
It would be really cool.
Just, I'm your mama, I'm your daddy, I'm your sister.
Yeah. I think language would be cool if you could gain multiple languages, you know, like.
I failed at math, or not at math, Spanish, so.
Right.
I think if, I don't know, if I had the chance to become a savant in the Spanish, it would have happened in high school when I was taking it and I got a concussion, but.
True.
I don't know.
Although art would be neat because you could make money from that. Music or art because you could make money from that.
Yeah, you could make, if you just became like Billy Strings on the guitar, like.
Yeah. I can say, I don't think I would choose synesthesia because that would be friggin' annoying. If you suddenly were like, I can taste colors.
No, I think it'd be really cool if you listen to a song and you just get like a color show when you close your eyes. Like, that's what it's like taking mushrooms. But
I was going to say, just take some mushrooms if that's what you're going for.
You get synesthesia.
Oh, my goodness. Ugh. All right. Well, that's my story. All about acquired savant syndrome.
That's,
do you have a chaser for us?
I do. So my chaser is a podcast recommendation called Jim Norton Can't Save You. And you might have heard of Jim Norton. He's a...
The comedian,
yeah,
right?
He's a well-known comedian, and he has, so he used to do like a bunch of radio shows. He used to work with Sirius XM, but he does a podcast. He got fired from Sirius and now he started a podcast where he accepts like call-ins, and he has some comedic guests like from Tim Dillon, Tony Hinchcliffe, Ali Sadiq, like a bunch of comedians he has on his show, and he'll accept live call-ins, and it's just people asking like for advice, and he just gives them like very comedically funny advice, but not the best advice. So I love the style of show where it's like call in for advice, because I like listening.
Is it
to what?
What's the other one? There's another one with an actor that's a call-in for advice. And I listened to that one
Gareth
for a while.
Reynolds and, Jake. I can't remember the other dude. Jake Johnson.
Yeah.
I want to say, this is so much better because Jim Norton's a real comedian. So he makes everything funny. And he's so quick, like, with his quips. So it's worth a watch. Like,
okay, time out for 1 second.
So fucking funny.
Okay. Time out for 1 second. Wrong ear. Sorry about that.
Worse.
I forgot to plug my laptop in when I came in here to record, and so I almost died.
Almost died. No, it's a good watch. It's pretty funny. I mean, I've listened to it. I've listened to every single episode, and he has, like, because Jim Norton was a big proponent of Opie and Anthony, which I never really listened to.
Okay.
I wasn't old enough.
I never got into that.
He gets Anthony Cumia, I think one of the people from ONA. And
okay.
It's really funny.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. What's your chaser?
My chaser is a watch recommendation from Prime. And Mike Rowe, the host of Dirty Jobs, has a new show called Somebody's Gotta Do It. And it's basically Dirty Jobs, but not,
it sounds like,
not just dirty jobs. Like, there's other stuff. Like, he goes and visits a bird sanctuary. And so they're talking about like raising these birds and stuff and how they have to dress up so they don't freak these birds out. And so the birds that they're raising don't get imprinted on people. They want them to be birds so that they can eventually rewild them, kind of thing. So they're taking,
dress up as a mother goose so the goose imprints them.
Kind of, yeah. Okay. So it's a really cool show. We've watched a bunch of episodes. It's got quite a few episodes on there. And from everything from dance, like a dance troupe, to rewilding birds that are near extinction and they're trying to bring back this species from the edge. And so it's a cool show. I like it. I think you'll like it because you liked Dirty Jobs.
Give a crow. A little side chaser. He started a scholarship program for blue collar jobs, basically.
Yeah.
So like he'd pay for a bunch of kids to go to like trade colleges and trade stuff schools. Like that. Which
it's cool. It's really cool.
He's a solid guy. He went on Theo Von's podcast this past weekend a bunch. So,
oh, really? Oh, cool.
It's really cool to hear his perspective of kind of encouraging younger dudes to go into trades, because it's kind of a dying art. Is a
it
trade
is.
Program.
And it's definitely an art.
It's
and
100%
it's needed.
Like,
Yeah. Cool.
It's super cool. Love Mike Rowe.
Yeah.
And I love that chaser.
Yeah. I think that wraps us up.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Go ahead and check us out on YouTube if you're listening right now and you want to see our faces and some...
our weird backgrounds.
Yeah, your background's way cooler than mine, but...
I put in a lot of time and effort on my background. Yeah. We can work on yours.
You can't really see mine. I tried to put, I put time and effort, but not as much as it. My background is hidden by my body.
Yeah.
All right. Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.